On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, I'm here with Tim Rodmaker of the Chicago White Sox organization. Tim, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate your time. Tell the listeners about yourself, if you would, please.
Sure, you bet. Thanks for having me, Chris. Tim Rodmaker, strength conditioning coach for the Chicago White Sox in AA Birmingham this year. This is my third summer in Birmingham. Been to all our affiliates except Charlotte. And, yeah, I'm 35, married, got two kids. Love it. Love coming to the park every day.
All right. So every affiliate from rookie ball.
Well, every affiliate except Charlotte. That's our AAA spot.
Okay.
I have not been to Charlotte yet. Yeah.
Okay. What are some of the differences you're seeing in AA where you're at versus the lower levels? Anything different, or are you guys kind of doing the same thing throughout and you just have older guys?
Yeah. That's funny you say that, because sometimes we look around here and we go, wow, nothing's, we still deal with the same stuff. No, you know, it is different though. In the lower levels, a lot of teaching, a lot of introducing, a lot of getting guys familiar with what professional baseball is. So not only are you the strength coach and you're teaching them our strength conditioning program, but you're teaching them why, the hows, the when. By the time we get here to AA, we hope they have a better understanding of some of the back end, and now we can really start to tune the program to them. Because as we say here, you're a phone call away. And you're not a phone call away in rookie ball when you just get drafted, most guys. But here, yeah, you're a phone call away. So I have a couple responsibilities. One is that if they do go to Chicago tomorrow or the next day, I don't want them to miss a beat when they walk into the weight room there with AT. I want them, it's like they've been there all season. On the other hand, part of that is helping them take responsibility and personal responsibility for the program and how that program is best fit to them. Now, one thing I love about the White Sox program is the continuity of the program. The terminology we use from day one when we draft guys in rookie ball to day whatever in the big leagues, it's the same. So you hear, you know, workouts go up on the board, or we go run with the pitchers, or agility with the position players. Those words are all going to be the same. And I think that is huge in the success of our program from an early start with the guys.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, man. From, you know, from big league down, just to be able to hear the same thing is huge. And like you said, in AA, they're a phone call away. You know, we just had a guy probably a week or two go up from here, and he was shocked to go, but it was like, all right, we've prepared you here, you know your routine, just stick with it up there and you'll be fine. And he's doing fine up there. And I think, like you said, that's a big thing. I started in rookie ball, and actually we haven't talked about this, but I'm pretty sure you started in Bristol, if I'm not mistaken.
I did.
I started in Bristol also. I mean, we were the Pirates and you were the White Sox, but so you know the Bristol story as well as I do, but rookie ball is just way different in the sense, like you said, you're just trying to educate guys, and that league is interesting because it's the first time they play under the lights, a lot of them, especially like the young Latin guys. So we had a kid come up and pitch under the lights, and he just kind of stood there and froze, and we were like, what's going on? And it's like, you know, this is the first time he's pitching under the lights, and so it's like, you know, we're just trying to teach you what pro ball is and what everything, you know, that goes into taking care of your body and the long season and everything. So I'm right on board with you there, man. That's cool.
Nice. I'm happy we have the Bristol connection.
Yeah, man. Somebody's got to share it, you know.
It's such a safe weight room. Yeah, you can't understand. And you know what? I think the guys we have them when they're younger, and then you get here. And I mean, if you've ever been to Birmingham, this park's only 3 years old. It's phenomenal. I mean, the weight room is killer. Everything's killer. And there's such an appreciation. If you've had to grind it out trying to work out in a concession stand as you do in Bristol, and you make it somewhere up here where you got all the elbow room you need. It's pretty cool. But yeah, you're right, man. I mean, just the that's the other thing too, is the cultural difference. Usually by the time we get guys to this level, they've had a couple years in America, if this isn't their home. And you know, at those lower levels, sometimes it's their first time away. And that's a big, it's a big deal. And you got to remember that when you're asking things of these players, but they're getting things asked upon them that are much greater than strength and conditioning, you know, just real world stuff. And it's all little pieces of that puzzle that go together. That's awesome. One day, when my kids are older, maybe we'll drive past Bristol and, you know, say, hey, this is where it started.
For real, man, it is where it started. It's crazy to think about. It is actually a concession stand. Like, you're not exaggerating at all. And that's the thing. Like, it was my first year there, so I was like, man, this is awesome. Pro ball. Like, we got our own gym at the field. And then I went right to double A, and it was like they unpacked my bag on the road the first day. And I was like, where am I?
Yeah.
Where am I?
Flip side of that is the kids we get from big universities as well. You know, the Louisvilles, the TCUs, and then they show up. I mean, they're at the top of the heap where they're coming from, and they show up at a Bristol or something like that, and it's a little real world shock for them also. So yeah. It's good.
Yeah.
Kind of can help level everyone out, level the playing field.
I interned down at TCU, so I know exactly what their weight room is and their lifting philosophy, and all those guys are super strong and whatnot. And then, like you said, you get them in a setting like Bristol, and it's like you got dumbbells up to 75 that were probably the first dumbbells ever made.
Yeah, for sure.
They're like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
All right, so what is your role exactly with the PBS-CCS? Are you a behind-the-scenes guy? Are you front-of-the-lines guy?
Yeah, my role with the PBS-CCS, I think it's more behind the scenes, for the better. I post the content to the website. So anyone who'd like to contribute content, that goes to Gene Coleman. And then he sorts through that and pieces the stuff together that he'd like to be put out on a monthly basis. Yeah, and then I post it and help get it to Twitter and Facebook and get it out to people. So mostly behind the scenes, but I am always happy to kind of speak about it to anyone in real life. So if that is a little bit of frontline stuff, yeah.
How long have you been doing that?
The website with the PBS-CCS, since Hutt took over as president. So I think this is my third summer doing it. And it's been pretty cool. You know, it's definitely grown from what I remember. I remember the first winter meetings I attended, and they showed us the website on that platform when I started helping, and then we revamped it, and it's grown. It's been pretty awesome to watch it grow and watch the guys contribute the articles. The videos were really sort of sporadic prior to that. And you know, I think with Gene and a couple other guys who've really kind of spearheaded getting info and getting it piled up, so you know we always have enough. It's been pretty cool, yeah. And I think the technology aspect has just made things easier as well. 10 years ago, you know, it sounds silly, but iPhones just weren't in everyone's hand where they are now. So it's easy for really anyone to make a video or kind of type something up and get it out to us.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea behind the podcast here, is just get coaches on, get information from them, and get it out there. So appreciate you doing what you're doing with it, and you know, we're gonna try to make this thing grow
as we can. You're taking the initiative.
So yeah. All right, man, transitioning a little bit. Speaking of the PBS-CCS, I just read an article about you the other day. And one of the things that I kind of took away was, it seems like you're always doing something in the off season. It seems like you're a busy guy. Tons of different things you've done in the off season. So I think let's probably start with MLB Europe, because that's most relevant, okay. And then we'll kind of run through the other stuff that you do, just going through that. So tell us about MLB Europe, what you did there, how you got involved, kind of what you learned and took for your career?
MLB Europe, what an awesome gig. How I got involved, you know, my first year or two with the Sox, I'd heard about it. And I heard there was an opening, and then I kind of indirectly applied through my boss, Dale. Didn't get it. And then maybe two winters after that, I heard there was an opening again. Really wanted to be in the mix for it. Kind of pushed a little harder, and I ended up getting that spot. And at the time, there was only three spots. And I mean, just where to begin? Well, you know, I think kind of fast tracking to now, you know, we had a couple of those MLB Europe guys in the show this season with Gift and Max Kepler. You know, you see these guys and they're making a real impact. You know, these guys started through that MLB Europe program. And so you backtrack to a dozen years ago or so, and here they are kind of through Jeff Crichel, who is our boss. You know, you're taking the programs and you're saying, how can you introduce these to kids, different cultures, learning the game and learning what it's going to take to kind of succeed in the game. So, yeah, I was beyond fortunate. I ended up working with the French team and the Swedish team. And even that was, the differences were amazing, right? We think of them both as like just sort of developed European countries, which they definitely are, but the mindset in each, the French world was very, you know, they sometimes, like their nutrition, the way they eat, these kids are living really at a dorm, but you look around, it's like, they're just not eating a lot, you know, a couple, like a thing of bread and yogurt, and they sort of always had a drink. And then you go to Sweden and it's the dead of winter, and these kids are like Vikings still. I mean, they're huge. They all have long hair, and they just crush food at the facilities where they're at. And the setups were a little different. You know, in France, these kids were living more like in a dorm. And in Sweden, they were really living on their own, almost as though you were in college. And then they would just show up to this cafeteria. But a lot of those kids kind of cooked on their own for some meals and then ate in the cafeteria. And they had cooking class even through the baseball team. But, you know, these kids just pile it on. And so for them, getting them to buy in was one thing. And it was fairly easy. You could ask them to work really hard. You could tell them, well, hey, we're going to eat immediately after this. And then you're going to have time to rest. And then we're going to go to practice. Where the French team was a little different, you know, they would kind of hustle all day long and know that there wasn't a lot on the back end when it came time to eat. So for me, I had to kind of learn about that and learn that difference and how am I going to deal with that? You know, being an American, I wasn't used to seeing that.
Interesting stuff. So were you doing like strength training programs too with these guys? I know it was dead of winter, so they were indoors. Was it primarily strength focus with a little bit of baseball focus, or was it full go indoor baseball with a little strength focus?
Yeah, good. That's a really good question, right? So like the French team, they had a couple locations throughout France. One way north, very cold. That was mostly all indoor strength. As we got to some of the southern locations, you know, it was probably somewhere between 80 and 90 degrees during the day. So they had all the outdoor time that they wanted, and they could do that. And they were able to do their strength stuff. So they kind of had the best of both worlds, even throughout the winter. Sweden, it was cold the whole time. It was mostly snowy the whole time, too. But their setup there, they were full buy-in. And even though they maybe had less to work with, they were able to really get a lot accomplished throughout the day. So strength training a couple days a week, baseball stuff a couple days a week, kind of find the balance between the two and their schoolwork. And most of those kids had a job kind of on the side. Yeah, it was good. It's kind of just as you would figure an off season to be.
Lot to handle then. Did they have strength coaches there and you were just helping, or were you the primary guy?
Yeah, so in France, they had strength coaches at the facilities. And we would try to work, you know, we were kind of the primary guy. We'd work with them. We'd say, hey, here you are sort of on the progression. This is where you we're going to kind of want to take the progression to by the next time we come in. And how can we help expand that to maybe, you know, if we were working with kind of high school age kids, okay, how can we expand that to what we would call junior high age kids? Sweden, we were really, I was the only guy. Their head coach, director, the Tony Klarberg, he's in charge of everything basically, took a fabulous interest in the strength and conditioning, however, and, you know, absorbed all the knowledge he could. That way, when there wasn't a strength coach there, they really didn't miss a beat. And so the hands-on approach, I think, is what helped them move it forward.
So what would you say you took from that experience back to the States with you that's kind of helped you in your career now?
Oh, man. Yeah, definitely the thing I took is tolerance and patience and understanding what it's like to be the person who's not in their own country, who can't speak the language, who maybe needs to act, maybe, you know, someone just stood there and looked you face to face and told you what to do or where to go or how to order food, and you still have to ask again because you just don't understand. So, you know, when we have kids who, you know, are just not fluent in English, or it's their first time over, or it's their 100th time over, but maybe they just need an extra second to figure something out, or they need me to repeat something. I mean, I just, my patience level, I feel really, really grew from that. And I was able to have a better understanding of what it's like to kind of be on the outside looking in, a little culture shock. And that's the personal thing. I think the professional thing is also a little bit of a cultural difference. And really here in America and in strength conditioning, you know, I was always kind of, it's like, okay, what are we doing today? What are we doing tomorrow and the day after that? And, you know, we're going to do something every day because we're here. So we're going to do something. France had a big impact on saying, what's the least amount of work you can do and get the most amount out of it? So they would almost, these coaches, they would sit down and look at their schedule and they'd start Xing days off. And these weren't days to do stuff. These were days that they weren't going to do anything. And say, okay, we can take all these days off. Now, what days can we work, and we can work with great focus and really hard and accomplish what we want to accomplish? And so I've tried to find a balance of that in saying, okay, well, here in professional baseball, we do show up every day, and you do have to do a little something to prepare yourself. But also, what's the least amount we can do to prepare ourselves at times, you know, when that's appropriate? So, yeah, a little professionally I took away, a little bit personally that I took away.
That's really great stuff, man. That's really, really good. And then our setting, like, couldn't apply more. Just being empathetic with guys and, like you said, finding that right balance of too much, not enough, just the right amount. So, yeah. Sounds like it was a great experience and you took a lot away from it.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Other things you've done in the off season. I read you worked at Velocity Sports Performance. I would assume that was probably with a lot of younger kids.
Velocity, it was, yeah. So that's mostly high school down. You know, we had a couple combine guys. I think you're always going to find guys training for the combine at those places. But also elementary school kids show up. And that's an interesting setup. Greg Frederick was my boss there. I mean, to put this out there, I've been blessed beyond what I've even deserved with this line of these jobs and stuff that I stumble upon, it seems like sometimes. But Greg, this was in Louisville, Kentucky, but at one point he had been the main baseball guy at Auburn University, and baseball was his only team. So he didn't have to have hundreds of kids. He just had this one team. And then all of a sudden here, I just sort of stumble in, minor league, schmuck, strength coach, stretch guy, and was able to make an instant connection with him because he knew about baseball. Smart, one of the smartest guys I've ever met, like could just talk me under the table at any given point, and has a real feel, I think, due to his baseball background, how to find a balance because you know, these private industries, they got to pay the bills and keep the lights on. You know, compared to us, I mean, we're going to show up whether we lose all 140 games or we win all 140 games, we're going to show up every day. So he had a real feel for being a bit of a businessman too, and giving these athletes and these kids and the parents, you know, what they need, what they want. It was pretty cool. Yeah, and you know, the kids, again, wow, you know, they just teach you patience. Kiddos, and the other thing, you know, they just help you to take it not so serious. I mean, it's just strength conditioning. We're not curing a disease or anything. We're just getting a little stronger, getting a little faster, trying to be athletic. You know, and the kids help sort of put that in perspective some days.
Yeah, for sure. I worked at a private facility with mostly kids 2 off-seasons ago now. And yeah, it was like you teach them something and you feel so accomplished, and then they come in the next day and you're like, all right, we're going to do this. And they're like, what's that? Like, like the patience thing is huge. I learned a ton about, because that's the thing, like, you know, you could get, I had a couple high school kids, and like those guys aren't much different age wise than some of the rookie ball guys you get, or some young guys in spring training that are lost. So you kind of learn that, all right, take a step back. It really isn't as serious as you think it is, like you said. And right, you know, the other side, like you said, your boss there, you got to kind of find a balance between what the parents want to see and what the kids really need, right? Yep. Like the parents just wanted me to put battle ropes out and med balls and just absolutely crush their kids. And it's like, you know, there's a time and a place for that, but we're also trying to actually accomplish some things. So finding that balance is important too. So good. Yep. Enough. Hey, you can learn.
Also squared a girl up in the nose with a soccer ball once. This little, she was probably in like middle school.
Really?
This ball came rolling down the turf, and I just, trust me, I got no soccer skill, but I just sort of kicked this ball, and it got a little life to it, and it just squared this girl up in the nose. You want to talk about feeling bad, you know, try being in your late 20s, beating up this middle school girl, but her dad just walked out and just, you know, put his arm around me and was like, hey, don't worry about it, man. I mean, she knows to get out of the way. I was like, okay, sorry. I think I locked myself away and cried just for a moment, but thought, oh boy.
That's the culture nowadays, man. Just toughen up, rub some dirt on it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was happy about that one.
So another one,
velocity doesn't exist in Louisville anymore, but some people I would consider some of the best strength coaches out in that area of Louisville, Kentucky, all came from that place. They're at University of Louisville, they're at Trinity High School. I mean, it was awesome. You look back on it, it was like almost 10 years ago now, and you go, wow, we're in the mix of something pretty cool at the moment. Had no idea, but yeah. Sorry, just throwing that out there
in case
they end up listening.
Yeah, you got to give them some props, man. You got to give them a shout out or two. All right, so another one that I saw on the list, USA Paralympic Alpine Ski Team. I want to hear about this one because I don't know if I've ever even heard of that, let alone heard of strength and conditioning for it. So tell me about that one. I'm interested in that one for sure.
Well, again, this is just, I'm just blessed. I mean, let me tell you, ski hills in Indiana are just a ramp in Colorado or in Europe, right? So the handful of times I've been skiing, snowboarding growing up, I mean, could not even come close to preparing me for, you know, the first time I went up a hill in Colorado with this crew. And so I got to give more people more shout outs. Kevin Pilafont, he was an athletic trainer with us in the White Sox. Best dude we had. He was working with the Paralympic ski team. He had worked with the able body guys and the para guys, kind of back and forth. He was living out in Colorado in the off season, and he kept calling me. I was actually doing the MLB Europe thing at the time. Kept calling and saying like, hey, you need to get on this gig. Got a spot for you. Come on. I just didn't, you know, I was already committed, and I was really enjoying the MLB Europe. Finally, though, you know, when I did walk away from it, I called him up and I said, okay, I'll give it a try. And, you know, here I am. I fly out there, and I mean, I can't even make it down the hill the first time. There's just no other way of putting it. The hill was crazy. And here, you know, you got kiddos zooming down, adults zooming down, grandma's zooming down, plus all these athletes zooming down. And even at the end of this trip, the director and the coach pulled me aside and said, is your passport current? I said, yes. They said, okay, we want you to be part of this crew, you know, as long as you can. So what did we do? Between Kevin and myself, you know, he we just tried to keep him as healthy and ready as we could, because so even though in the baseball world it was our off season, that was their competitive season in skiing. So, you know, for me personally, off the hill nutrition, on the hill nutrition, off the hill recovery, prep, stay ready. You know, that included some strength training, some yoga, some stretching, some recovery walks, some games. These athletes are amazing. You know, you want to talk about stories. Every athlete there has a story way more fascinating than what you'll find out of a strength coach. And, you know, some of these para athletes were born that way. Some of them, life took them that way. And they're just all fearless. You know, some of these people have survived tragedies that, you know, make movies out of. And because they've survived that, you know, they go, oh, so what? I'm going to bomb down this hill. What if I wreck? Who cares? What's going to happen? I'm going to lose my other leg. I already can't see. Or, you know, I'm going to lose an arm. Or some of them, I mean, they're just crazy enough to say, so what? I die. You know, I mean, they just no fear. So the para athletes themselves, they kind of, besides being broken up into genders, you know, they're broken up into the sit skiers, the blind skiers, and the stand skiers. And they are just phenomenal. And yeah, we got to see a good bit of the world for a couple winners, a good bit of Colorado for a couple winners. It was rad.
Yeah, that's a really incredible story, man. That's awesome stuff. I mean, I'm sure there's tons you took away from that has helped you in baseball.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, you want to talk about being pliable, flexible. You know, I think you could probably ask any strength coach, like, hey, give me a couple basic moves. I'm going to kind of generically package this stuff together and hand it out. And, you know, we'd all probably out of the same dozen exercises pick the same six or seven, right? But now you go to this crew, that stuff doesn't just work all the time. You know, like I said, I mean, maybe they can't see, maybe they're missing a leg, an arm. You know, how are you going to make it theirs? And so the way it made me at the time think outside the box and look at things that we consider pretty standard or normal and say, how can we put a spin on this that it's going to make it for you? You know, it's, yeah, it was cool. It definitely at the time, it's just, it sort of got caught with my pants down. You could say, like, I thought, oh, here, you know, I write it down, show Pilly, hey man, I got the best thing for today. Yeah, we're going to do this. And then you get the crew assembled and you go, wow, we can't do this. Okay, but they're all there, so what are you going to do? And yeah, it was awesome. And, you know, I think just the way they even took me in and let me be part of that group, and, you know, it was awesome. And yeah, I don't know. Anyone else? Yeah, you ever get a chance to do that? That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's great stuff, man. That sounds like a really good time and inspiring stuff. So what do you do? What do you do nowadays in the off season? I know you're married with two kids. Is the wife cool with you just running around doing anything you want in the off season, or you kind of taming it down a little bit?
Oh goodness, yeah. So what do I do now? It has to tame down, and I want it to tame down a little bit. You know, those are some of those things I did. Those are jobs you're supposed to have when you're in your 20s and you're single and you don't have kids and. You know, you need to be out there hustling, right? I mean, you can't just show up to the ballpark during the season and think that you're only going to get better and be able to bring your best because of that. So, yeah, the hustle part, I mean, I think that really goes back to just probably my mom and dad and how they raised me. And, you know, there weren't a lot of just sit-down time. There was always something to be done. Nowadays, to really answer your question, being dad's my favorite off-season job. Being husband and dad, you know, those are right up there. And I'm again, fortunate, blessed, right? So we used to have this pitching coach. I know I'm name dropping like it's no one's business right now. Larry Owens. Again, I mean, I don't know how I get the chance to be surrounded by these people that just know so much more than me and are willing to let me tag along. He was a pitching coach for us. He's now the head coach at Bellarmine University. This, you know, great school. beautiful campus, one strength coach, 300 athletes. You know, a ratio that's just unrealistic under any circumstances, right? So Steve Hartman, their strength coach, you know, I was through LO and Steve, I just say, hey, you make the workouts up. I will stand there and help implement, supervise, like get to know these guys. I go, I'm not trying to make your workouts if you guys want me to be involved. And so that was good. And so, yeah, you know, I like to help out LO at Bellarmine. Been fortunate enough to help at another small school in Louisville, Spalding. My friend, Sarah Clinton, strength coach from the Velocity crew. She took a maternity leave last winter, gave me a call, asked if I'd fill in, and I did. And, you know, that now we really start to kind of narrow in on where these off-season things help impact the decisions I make here daily. You know, we get these college kids. And here I get an opportunity to witness that college life and expectations on a day-to-day basis. And I go, okay, now I know when I get these kids in a rookie ball in a low A setting and they say, this is where I'm coming from, I really have a better feel for that because that's that college life. And but it's good, you know. Yeah, my wife, Alex, she's the best. I hope she's listening. But yeah, she won't give me full, you know, I don't think I can run around quite as much as I used to. Like I said, I'm probably not supposed to either, but she lets me stay a little busier than what I need to. So thank you, Alex, if you are this.
You got to have the right support group, man. It makes all the difference in the world. So,
no doubt about it.
My wife is right on board there. So shout out to her also. all right. So what do you believe makes a strength and conditioning coach successful?
Yes, I love this question, man. I saw this. What do I believe? That's better than thinking. What do I believe makes a strength and conditioning coach successful? Yeah, there's a couple things, right? First is relationships. You know, you have to, and I don't mean fake, just, hey, what's up, a relationship. You know, we have about 250 guys in the minor leagues. I mean, with definitely, at a minimum, my goal to know every one of their names. And it's really more of a goal to know something about them if I haven't had them for an entire season at some point. So whatever it is we sort of connect over or they're willing to share with me or that I get to know about them. And then especially for the guys that you have for a full season or you have multiple seasons or you have at two different affiliates for a season or two and you're able to witness their journey, connections, relationships, letting them know that you're more than a robot standing there saying work out and stretch and run. But you're saying do this because I truly care about you, your career, your journey, and who you are at the end of the day. And that's where it starts. And then I guess secondly, what do I believe makes a good strength coach? Probably not being a knucklehead. Probably not asking one of these guys who gets paid to do this to do something that just seems really outrageous that you saw on the internet now. Or that you heard was the latest rage back home. This is as much as, you know, you say baseball moves slow and it's slow to change and this and that. That's okay sometimes. There's a little truth to that. Again, you know, we mentioned this earlier, right? You can't take what we do too seriously or take yourself too seriously in this role at times. You know, I'm not reinventing the wheel. Wheel's already been invented. They were doing this before I came along. They'll be doing this once I leave. I'm just here to help it roll as smoothly as I can. So, you know, I got to be able to filter out what's hot on the block at that moment because it might be crap. But then again, it might be awesome. So, you know, you just got to give it time and you just can't be a knucklehead.
No doubt, man. No doubt. The basics always seem to come back, right? It's like,
yes.
This is kind of crazy right now, but I still think we should probably squat, press, hinge, all the basic stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm right there with you. And, you know, along those lines, what advice do you have for others? You know, you've been in the game a while, you've seen a lot of things. What advice do you have maybe for young guys coming in or even older guys that have been around the block a few times?
Oh, well, okay, yeah, I'll work backwards. For the older guys, what advice do I have? Don't push me away when I ask you questions, please, because I still have a lot of questions myself. I'm still trying to learn. I don't know everything. And old guys, teach me about mustaches a little better, like how to keep this thing, how to keep a rally mustache groomed throughout the season. You know, my wife will be very happy this is audio and not video and that people can't see this mustache right now. She's seen a couple mustaches. This isn't her favorite one. So yeah, you know, the old guys, I just let me hang on. Let me watch. Let me ask a lot of questions. And, you know, when my time comes to speak, just give me a moment to say what I think. Because I got to know where I fall in line also. For young guys, goodness, man, the list is fairly long, but it could be boiled down to a couple things. A couple things is you're probably not going to get compensated what you think you're worth. And you better be okay with that right off the bat. And so, you know, that just means you're probably not going to make a lot of money, but you're going to work really hard for a little bit of money at the beginning. And that's okay. That's part of paying your dues, putting your time in the trenches, I guess. Really, though, for the young guys, I think the thing is surround yourself. You know, don't think you should or you need to exclude a certain line of thinking until you've truly given it a try and you know why you don't like something or you know why you do like something. And once that happens, you can start to direct your journey. And again, this kind of goes back to you were asking about the off season, but man, I think you got to stay busy. I think you got to be out there. You got to have a hustle. You got to be willing to grind. And this sounds a little silly, right? But you got to work out too. Right. So I hope this, you know, if someone is listening to this and it kind of gets you. Yeah. But if you're a strength conditioning coach, you either need to be pretty, you need to do something with your strength or you need to do something with your conditioning. Hopefully you're doing something with a little bit of both, but you can't neglect them. Right. You got to practice what you preach a little bit in this world. And I actually, all right, I'm going to give you another name, Dan Brown. He's out of Indianapolis. You know, we were talking about program ADD a little bit, like how it's just easy to sort of jump around as in training and buy into these different things. As the strength coach, yeah, you don't want to be pushing an ADD thought process on your athletes, but sometimes you do need an ADD thought process because, you know, you got to filter stuff out. So you might see something or hear something or read something, go, yeah, I'm going to try that and give it and maybe get away from what you do for a little bit and try it. And at the end of that, say, wow, that's awesome. Or, yep, no, put that in the pile of been there, done that. We're not going to do it. You know, it makes for a fun journey. You're going to try some stuff that you probably didn't think you'd try right off the bat.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm a big believer in, you know, if you're going to discard it or discredit it, you got to try it first.
No doubt.
And the obvious, like if you're a strength coach, you probably should work out. I know that's probably going to offend some people, but it's like, you know, for me, if you look the part, that's half the battle. Like guys come to me and it's like, you know, they actually probably believe in what I say just because I take pride in looking the part, you know, so
sure.
Right on board with you there. If it offends people, sorry, no, not sorry, but
right.
All right. So you talked about, you know, learning from older guys and kind of that train of thought. Where do you go for continuing ed? I know we just talked beforehand. You said you're kind of new to podcasts. Are you reading books, attending seminars? Where are you going? Are you just hands-on learning?
You know what? Continuing ed, gosh, what an interesting subject. Where do I go personally? Yeah, you know, hands-on a lot, I think, sort of. So just learning in the moment with some of the things I've done. Otherwise, yeah, I'm late to the party, but podcasts, right? So trying to listen to a podcast every now and then and see what that's all about. Books, yeah, when I have time to sit down and read, I do enjoy reading. Like I said, I'm not always as successful at that, because what I end up doing is I read, I start to get into it, and then I go, oh, hey, I'm going to go try that. And then I try it for a while, and then I come back to the book and read the rest of it. And, you know, that's good. Seminars, not really as much. Thankfully, we have an opportunity for that stuff at winter meetings. I find it personally hard to just get away for long weekends in the off season to attend a seminar. So, you know, my athletic trainer this year, James Kruk, he likes to laugh, but I crank up YouTube a lot and I'll turn it on in the background and listen, which I guess is maybe an early version of a podcast, just listening to the video, not actually watching it. But yeah, just kind of, you know, if we're dealing with something, I just try to find some videos and watch, and again, use the filter that I have and sort of say, well, I don't know about that, or yeah, okay, I can do that. And I guess, you know, through the NSCA, the publications that we get with the membership, you know, leaf through those. Again, kind of, I mean, those things are, thank you, NSCA, I guess, for producing a lot of content. However, I probably can't make it through a 1,000-page research magazine every month. But what I can do is kind of just go through the table of contents, and I just sort of pick the ones I think are relevant. Unfortunately, I got to discard some of them that are not relevant, and I just read those. Yeah, and so, okay, how can I take this and apply it to what we're doing?
For sure, man. Sounds like you're going all over the place, and that's good. I mean, we've talked about
ADD.
You can learn from anywhere, so you can't discredit too much without looking into it first. And early podcasting YouTube video, so we'll get you involved in podcasting more.
That's the real thing, but.
All right, man. We've been at it for a while. I've been having a lot of fun. I don't want to take too much of your day, but if you got time, I'd like to do a lightning round with you. What do you think?
I'm in. Yeah.
Cool. All right. First question, and you've given us a lot of good names, but biggest influence on you in the strength and conditioning field?
Oh, my gosh. I can't give one name. But if I have to, I got to go Dale Torborg. You know, he was my first boss. He hired me. He gave me a chance. And he's really been the guy who has helped me springboard to everywhere else and given me an opportunity to go everywhere else. So, you know, a close second would be Alan Thomas, AT, our big league guy. But even our opportunity to just be minor league Joe Schmoes, to have that relationship with AT was through Dale. So he gets the top spot. I hope he's listening.
Okay, so we talked about training earlier. If you could train with only one piece of equipment, what would it be?
Me. Just I don't need anything besides myself.
Body weight?
Yeah. I'm like forever I'm stuck on an island, or I get to go to the store and pick something and put it in a room and that's all I get.
I mean, either way, it's your training program, so... If you want to buy a barbell or a kettlebell, or if you want to do some bodyweight stuff, do some pull-ups on a tree, either way, I guess.
Yeah. you know, I think the simplistic version, yeah, truly, if you don't, you know, don't discredit what you and your body can accomplish. However, if I get a piece of equipment, I'm going to get a barbell.
For sure.
And some weights that go with it.
Yeah, of course, of course. They kind of come as a package to you.
Right, okay, good.
Biggest accomplishment professionally and or personally?
Wow. Well, two different tracks. Biggest accomplishment professionally. You know, I don't feel like I've accomplished everything I want to. But so far, you know, we won the Pioneer League in 2011, and I was part of that journey, and that's our short season rookie ball team in Great Falls. And it was an interesting way to get there, because I had already been to full season for 3 or 4 years, and I went, you know, we flip-flopped some stuff around, so I went back to the rookie ball, and I fell in love with it, and kind of I got a much better appreciation for what was happening. And when we won the Pioneer League that year, really, wow, that was awesome. Because everyone has to be on board. It's not just me. So, you know, that was really cool. Personally, my biggest accomplishment, man, gosh, this is lightning round, and here I am stuttering and taking that time. It is, again, I've been so blessed. I think my biggest accomplishment, I hope, is not disappointing or letting people down or sort of like living up to what they wanted. You know, I probably would have to go back to my mom and dad and just succeeding and showing them that all the probably frustration and rebel rousing and 5 years in college, you know, all that wasn't for naught. That, you know, here, I got a real job and it's awesome. It's pretty special, right? I mean, there's only 30 big league teams. So there's 30 major league strength coaches in the whole world. We're not just talking America, North America. When we're talking the world, there's thousands of CEOs. There's thousands of people in probably prominent positions in businesses. But there's only 30 of these guys. And you say, yeah, well, there's a couple hundred minor league teams. Okay, there's a couple hundred, but that's still a pretty small fraction. So any of us that hold one of these jobs, wow, you should take a lot of pride in it, and you should be proud, because there are people behind you who will gladly take the job if you don't want it. So personally, yeah, or is that professional? Maybe it crosses both. I do know, however, though, at the end of the night, each night, and I hope we have, you know, I think we'll have more kids in the future. We have two daughters right now. When I get to hug and kiss them goodnight and put them to bed and hug and kiss my wife, that's a pretty good personal feeling right there to say, hey, we did it. You know, we made it another day, and hopefully we contributed to these girls becoming better people, and hopefully we contributed to each other becoming a better couple and better adults at the end of the day.
Hey, that's great stuff, man. That's awesome.
I'm rambling too much for this to be a lightning round.
We'll no, it's thunder and lightning. It's all good, man. Last one. If you could choose any career other than strength and conditioning, what would it be?
Wow, if I could choose any career besides strength and conditioning, I'm not smart enough to do it, but I would probably be a veterinarian. You know, I have a soft spot in my heart for animals. I love pets. Extremely thankful for our veterinarians back home that help take care of our dogs. But I think just that being out there and, you know, animals to me bring such a interesting view of life and maybe life at its purest sometimes. You know, I don't know many animals that are Skyping or, you know, get to be strength coaches, but there they are surviving every day and you watch their relationships and stuff. It'd be cool to kind of be hands in and be part of their life if I could. Yeah. Long answer again. Veterinarian, short answer.
No, that's cool, man. That's awesome. My dog at home I look at her all the time. I'm like, man, your life is just so simple. So simply just running around, chasing the toy, sleeping on the bed or wherever she wants and just living showing it up. So
yeah, they're just showing off, you know, like, hey, look how you do all the hard work. Thanks. Here I am. Rub my belly.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, it's been really, really good time, man. I've had a lot of fun, awesome. a lot of good stuff on this one. If the listeners want to get in touch with you to learn more from you, where can we get a hold of you?
Sure. Anyone can give me a shout, and I do genuinely mean that. You can get a hold of me at trodmaker@shysocks.com, which is trodmaker at chisox.com. And we can go from there. Otherwise, you know, learn on your own and get out and about and get your hustle on.
For sure, man, for sure.
Yeah, well, but I'd love for people to reach out. I always love to make contacts and learn a little something from them also.
Yeah, man, no doubt. Well, I'm sure a ton of people will be reaching out after this one. Ton of good stuff on here. So thanks for coming on and taking time out of the day and spending some quality time with me, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet. Thanks for letting me jabber. I feel like I did a lot of talking. I probably didn't give you as much of an opportunity as I should have. You're the host.
Hey, it's your episode, man.
Man, it was awesome.
It was a good time. We'll be in touch soon. All right, everybody, that concludes the episode with Tim. I hope you enjoyed it. Tim's a great guy, a lot of energy, a lot of passion. You can hear it when he speaks. Three things that I took from Tim. Number one, have a hustle. Do whatever you can in season and out of season to make the most out of your career. Number two, try new things. Don't be afraid to try something in your own programming before you discard it for your athletes. And number three, surround yourself with great coaches. He talked about the other coaches that he's been around that have helped him get to where he is today. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed the episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.